Good morning, Ben. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Ari. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God, dude. I've experienced this EP, and I swear to God, you are Elton John, Bernie Taupin with a good twist of David Bowie.
I would take any one of those by themselves. I like that you said you experienced it. That makes me feel very good about it.
Well, to see the videos, it's like watching it, like I'm watching a movie. I mean, you put so much into it, and it allows me to have a truer interpretation of what you're bringing forward.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I was very keen to connect the storytelling aspect of what I've always done in my acting career with the music. And I was keen for the videos not to be too performative or abstract. I wanted them to sort of feel honest, like the songs did to me.
In the video 11/11, you embrace the presence of so many. And what I love about this is that I've met more people that are inspired by 11/11 on a clock. And then here you are with a video.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know much about the sort of 11/11 mirror number, angel number, make a wish aspect. Just that it was a thing, and it sort of became a bit of a habit for me. If I saw that it was 11/11, that I would sort of shut my eyes and make a wish. But it seemed connected to the sort of grander metaphor and the grander message of the song, which was about this kind of sacrificial kind of love that you keep giving, even if it's not being returned how you want it to be, and you know, the generosity of kind of making a wish for somebody else, if you see it's 11/11, was a message I very much wanted to encourage. And then when I sort of finally released the song into the world on my, just after my 40th birthday, I sort of wanted people to sort of take that on and be like, hey, if you guys are making a wish or trying to support someone or whatever, do it for someone else. You know, that kind of generosity and hopefulness was something that I was hoping would kind of run through the album thematically, and that would sort of feed out into the world a little bit.
When you say when you finally released it, how long has it been stuffed inside of you? And was it a fear of judgment? What kept it inside you so long?
I think when I was about 18, 19, I was writing songs with some songwriters, and I signed to a manager, and I was recording some big band jazz and then some sort of pop music, and really didn't know where I wanted to land with it. And I didn't really feel like I had anything to say for myself, and I didn't really know what I wanted to sound like even. And then the dream, I think, sort of felt like it was slipping through my fingers, and I focused much more on the acting side of things and theater and television and eventually films. And I just started to love that and love that medium. And I played a lot of musicians through the course of the last 20 years and been doing impressions. But even when I was a kid, I would do Sinatra tribute concerts, and I would do Stevie Wonder soul nights. And, you know, I've played, you know, sort of Americana folk street buskers in movies and things. So, but it was never sort of my genre, my voice, my stories. And I just think, you know, I've had bits of lyrics and pieces of songs over the years, but never a kind of full finished EP or records worth of stuff that I was proud enough of to release. But I think during the course of the pandemic, I realized I didn't want to be an 85-year-old man who hadn't lived out that dream and who hadn't put his own music into the world, like you say, for fear of judgment. And actually, when I did release it, it felt just like just that. It felt like a release of something that I'd been holding on to, and it felt really almost a relief to kind of let go and be like, hey, this is me. This is what I sound like. This is what I write about. And you know, I hope you dig it.
Yeah, I can so relate with that story, because my first release was based on a personal challenge. They think I'm weird, so I'm out to prove it. And that's what it was all based on. The whole entire theme was that everybody thinks I'm weird, so I'm just going to go ahead and prove it to you.
That's excellent. I love that title.
when you brought this forward, I mean, the video and stuff like that, you brought in some old friends. I mean, this is like a real team family effort here.
It really is. I love that you said the family effort. Yeah, I got my co-stars from Westworld and The Punisher, Floriana Lima and Evan Rachel Wood, to come and star in the videos with me. Just because I knew it would, you know, I wanted to tell these stories in a sort of honest and intimate kind of a way, and I knew I could sort of trust them with it, and I knew it would be, they'd be game, and it would make it easier and more fun for me. And then managed to get some an old friend to direct one video, and one of the directors from Shadow and Bone, the Netflix show that I do, to come and direct the other. And I was very, very lucky that people sort of lent their skill and time to me to try and get these videos feeling classy.
So like when you do a music video, and because with everything that you've done in television and things like this, I mean, it takes a while to bring it together with production and all that kind of stuff. But a song that's 3 minutes and 50 seconds long, it still takes the same amount of energy, and you've got to sell that story in 3 minutes and 50 seconds.
Yes, it was very rewarding, though, particularly the 11/11 video, which was my concept. And it's incredible to have a new creative experience on a film set after sort of 20 years of seeing a shot being set up. It was specifically a shot of Evan Rachel Wood sitting in the audience of this dusty old theater in a red seat, kind of looking up proudly at the stage. And I'd had this idea about the song needing to have a performance element to it, but maybe there's only one person in the audience. And that's kind of how the video idea started. So to actually see that shot being filmed just sort of less than 2 months after I'd had the idea was a really kind of quite moving thing for me. But you're right, it takes a lot of passion and a lot of perseverance to kind of make your own music and do it all yourself. It's certainly a task, but I was very lucky. I had some people I could call to say help.
Yeah, I love the idea that you called it a concept. And so now the creative has got to ask another creative here. The music, is it the actor bringing the script to life, or is it the writer in you going, I need to find that new stage because that inner child inside of me has to continue growing?
I think it's closer to the second one. It doesn't feel performative to me. It's not really to do with acting or you know, certainly a continuation of storytelling, but I think it's more about sharing something real and what conversations that might spark or what memories that might spark for people or how they might connect with it. The songs that I love the most feel like they're authentic things from someone's life, but I don't care what the situation was for them. What I care about is what it connects to in my life and what it makes me think about. Whether that makes me giggle or... whether it makes me teary or whether it makes me angry or what any reaction I think is fair and okay, but so long as people feel something, I'm happy.
I got to tell you, the first journey through the EP, that because as I was preparing and stuff like that, I wanted your music to be right there with me, and I said Ben allows art to breathe, and I mean, you can hear it, you can feel it, you can experience it.
Well, that is a very lovely thing. I certainly didn't try too hard to make them or mold the songs into anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't try to restrict myself to a genre or a length of song or anything like that. I had my producers, John and Jesse, help me kind of make sure that they were structured. You know, sometimes they'd be like, you sure you don't want to write a bridge for this song? And I would concede and say, okay, I'll write a bridge. But other than that, they just let the songs be what they were. The songs are still what I sent to them on a voice note from my piano when I first kind of met them. These are the songs I want to do. And then they just helped me kind of orchestrate them and you know, find the right people to put them together and then make everything sort of sound like it was in one room, even though it was all recorded separately during the lockdowns.
Wow. See, but that's the thing. What I love about music is the fact that when you do take it through the process of steps like that, you know, there's got to be a reason why these songs from the 50s and 60s are continuing, you know, to be played today, 50 and 60 years later. And just the way that you're going through this by saying, no, I really don't want a bridge. And it's also the interest that you have with conflicting emotion and transitional feelings. I mean, you can feel what you're doing. You can hear it and it sounds raw, which means in 25 to 30 years, I'm still going to be listening to this.
Well, I don't know about that, but I appreciate what you're saying about the rawness of it. And partly that's to do with actually my lack of experience and lack of personal musicianship, is that I'm not really a piano player. I don't really know what I'm doing. So I'll sit at the piano for a long time just moving my fingers around because I don't really know the names of the chords or what chords are supposed to go together in what key. I don't know anything about that. I rely on other people to help me structure it later, but I just move my fingers around until it sounds like the feeling that I was having when I was writing the lyrics, the feeling I was having that inspired the lyrics. So hopefully it's something that just feels right, because I would use these words that the producers would balk at. Like I would say, but this chord is more scrunchy, and they would like, what does scrunchy mean? And I'm like, I don't know, it means I feel it in my stomach more. I just move your thumb down one, and you know, that would drive them absolutely nuts. But I think it was a kind of a raw process. I wanted it to feel honest. I wanted the sounds to match the lyrics. I wanted the lyrics to match the feelings that I had when I was feeling the things that the stories are about in my life, the experiences. And then I wanted the videos to match, you know, the recordings. And so it was just important to me to make something really honest after 20 years of kind of pretending to be other people.
You bring up the piano. Boy, I'll tell you, I love the keys and the soul-filled feeling of Not the End. This song has a journey.
Yeah, that Not the End. That's my kind of like Doobie Brothers kind of vibe. It was a tricky one to kind of get right, but once we kind of got the organs and things, and my friend Hunter Elizabeth singing some backing vocals, it's really started to kind of like sit into a pocket. It was all based on that John Lennon quote that actually my dad used to tell me when I was a kid, which was that everything will be okay in the end, and if it's not okay, it's not the end.
No.
And that always brought me a lot of comfort, and so I borrowed it for the song. And then sort of added in all these other cliches of life advice that people give you, and they always mean so well when they give you these pieces of advice, but we're very down on things that sound like cliches in this sort of day and age. Nobody wants to hear that sort of positive messaging. So I wanted to write a song about how actually, if someone's trying to help you out, let them use whatever words they want.
Right.
And if you want to judge it, that's fine. But in the just know that my message to you is that it's going to be okay. And I think that the message of the entire album is essentially it's going to be okay.
That reminds me.
I think that's the only thing you can always universally say to someone that is, yep, that is right.
That reminds me of the Mark Twain quote where he said that, you know, use your own accent. Don't try to be somebody else. Use your way, stay your way, be faithful to it, and it will grow around you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we could all do in this day and age with moving a little bit more authentically through the world. And I think we're sort of leaning that way and allowing people to be who they are. And I think that's it's an important thing and probably a defining thing of this upcoming generation.
Yeah. When you do a song like Rise Up, what the drama that you feel inside the vocals, it's got to transfer over to the video and stuff like that. Are you in charge of that, or is somebody sitting down with you during the video saying, okay, Ben, here's the thing. Here, I got this idea, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden it comes to life, because there really is a movie-esque value to this.
Thank you. There's a combination. The 11/11 video was entirely my concept, and I sort of just needed someone to kind of set the camera and make it look classy and beautiful and bring that sort of realize that dream of what that would be. With Rise Up, my friend Georgie King, who is an actor as well, and she came up with the concept of building this sort of sun wall of old televisions, which I loved the idea of, because it felt like effortful, which I think the song is about, supporting someone and trying to encourage someone through something difficult, and so something where I was that was difficult to do, and certainly trying to build the sun was something that is sort of felt Herculean and vaguely impossible. So I loved that idea. And then we just sort of tweaked the story so that it would sort of feel more honest to me, so that I wouldn't have to do too much acting, so that I could just feel, you know, the reality of and allow sort of memory and kind of feelings to flow through and, you know, remember the feelings that I had when I wrote the song. Again, I think people connect with songs if they feel that they're honest.
Yeah, yeah. Now, because of the storytelling and because of the music and things like that, are we going to see a La La Land style movie coming from you one day?
Do you know what? I would love to do something like that. I think they're very, certainly good scripts for that kind of stuff are very few and far between. It's very difficult to write a movie script, let alone a movie script and, you know, 12 songs. But I'm always on the lookout for that kind of genre of thing. I think they're making a comeback with things like The Greatest Showman and La La Land, like you said. There's lots of those kinds of films in the works. So hopefully, you know, something good will find its way to me.
I wish I would have been a fly on the wall when you came up with Pirate Song, because I love the way that the strings are first introduced and then the rhythm of your vocals. My God, to be there, what made you, you know, put your vocals in that kind of a flavor and tone?
That's a good question. I think the vocals just kind of came out how they came out when I would hear the drums and everything. Yeah. The chords that I came up with on the piano were very strange for Pirate Song, and I think they were confusing to people initially, to the musicians. And so we did definitely like tweak them to make them feel a bit more accessible. But then, you know, then I thought the strings were actually the last thing to be added, because I had got Oliver Krauss, the string arranger, to do Ordinary Day and Rise Up. And then he was like, why don't you let me do a little something on the Pirate Song? I think I can make it sound like a creaking ship, like a creaking pirate ship. And that's kind of what it does. And then I think in terms of the singing, the rhythm of the singing, you know, I wanted this gang of soul pirates. I wanted these forlorn, kind of passionate pirate men who were all pining after this same woman who was elusive and eluding them, this back from the dead Red, who was a real life pirate you know, in the 1700s, who would fake her own death, and she just sounded so cool. And I imagined she must, you know, like a pirate had a woman in every port, you know, a pirate lady who was as badass as she sounded must have had a man in every port as well. And I had this metaphor of, well, what if you're one of those guys who's just waiting for her to come back from her latest pirate heist? What does that longing feel like? And that felt more interesting to me than yet another kind of love song or kind of song of longing. That felt more interesting to me.
I love how you use the power of theater of the mind, and then you know it's almost like an off-Broadway play, and then you say, no, let's take it up higher, and that's when you let it go to the rest of us.
Yes, yeah. I that song for sure was, we just kept adding and adding and adding till it felt too much, and then we pulled back a bit and then we let it go. Yeah.
The song Ordinary Day, this is the one I want to see on a live stage, and the reason why is because I want to see if you add dance to it.
Oh, interesting. Well, Ordinary Day is actually the only one that I play the piano at, so I always foresaw if that one was performed live, I would be probably sat at a piano. I think it's sort of the purest of the songs on there, in terms of the structure of the song and what kind of song it is. But it would be, I think it would be cool to play that song and sing it at a piano with a couple dancing something choreographed, you know, mm-hmm. that fits lyrically. I think that would be very cool. It would be a good, like, Dancing with the Stars song.
Well, congratulations on this CD. Where can people go, listeners go, where they can show you some love, listen to the album, experience the album or the EP and everything like that, and they can make it a part of their journey?
Well, it's on Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon Music and on all of the places that you find your music. And then on my Instagram and Twitter at Ben Barnes, there's links to everything and some videos of how it was put together and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you all roads will lead you back to me eventually.
Is it kind of weird to get on the computer, get on Spotify, on the smartphone and stuff like that? And it's like, oh, my God, that's me. That's me.
It really is wonderful. That is a huge part of the reward process for me, just being able to click on it and think, these are my songs that I wrote in my living room, you know, about my life. And it's kind of a trip.
I totally, with the way that Billie Eilish is, you know, bringing in emotional music and stuff like that, I totally see adult contemporary radio picking you up. And just because they need storytellers, they need somebody who has emotion inside their music.
Well, that's very, very sweet of you. Yeah, I think Billie Eilish is kind of amazing, watching the documentaries of her kind of recording in bedrooms and everything. It's like, well, why can't you do it? I find it quite inspiring. So why can't you do it yourself? And she obviously speaks to an audience of younger people. Her influences are certainly, I'm sure, spread far and wide, but it's something that feels utterly contemporary and cool in a way that I know I can never be, but I do have those kind of old school influences that kind of some of the older crowd probably recognize, but also hopefully I deliver it in a way that is just feels a bit more universal. Like, yep. I hope that it's the stories that win out.
Absolutely.
You know, over the genre.
you got to come back to this show anytime in the future, Ben. The door is always going to be open for you, sir.
Thank you, Arrow. Lovely to chat with you.
Well, you be brilliant today, okay?
Thank you, pal. You too.